first of all, thank you for stopping by today. We appreciate your time. And Bill, let's start a little bit with you because you're bringing VDAR to Canton and to Sioux Falls as well.
Correct. Yeah, well, we've known each other for maybe 3 years or something like that. I don't know. The first time you played in Sioux City is where I met you.
Yeah.
And so this time what happened was we were connected by an email maybe because VDAR was looking for gigs. So I really only have something to do with the one in Canton, and which is sponsored by the Sons of Norway. And there's a gig tonight sponsored by the Nordland Foundation in Sioux Falls. But they set that up separate. But sure, you know, there's a concert there. And then one in Sioux City on Sunday at the Lewis and Clark Interpretive Center, which is you've played there. This will be your third time there?
Yeah, that's right.
So
that's what initiated this trip here.
So. Right.
And you play all over America, all over the Midwest.
Yeah, wherever they want me.
You teach. Yeah. But where did you grow up? Tell us about your childhood.
Well, I grew up in Norway on the west coast, born in a place called Nordfjord. But when I was 5-6 years old, I moved to the south of the west coast to a town called Haugesund. So, which is between Bergen and Stavanger.
Tell me your first musical, like how did you become introduced to music as a child in Norway? What's the first music that you hear as a little boy?
Growing up, it would be a lot of film music in Nordfjord, actually. On the National Day, 17th of May, they used to have like a parade where all the fiddlers gathered and would walk. That's the first memory I have of fiddle music. And my dad played fiddle, so I got some exposure there too.
Yeah. So, did he play in the home? Did he play out in places? What was that?
Both.
Like? Both.
Or, well, yeah, you can finish your question there. Sorry.
No, I mean, where did you see him play? Was it something that you heard around the house, I guess, or was he a professional musician?
Mostly around the house with my dad, yeah.
Yeah.
But we did have a few gigs together when I was a kid, like in the community house and stuff like that for Christmas.
Yeah. When do you start playing?
That's a good question. We had like instruments laying around in the house, so I was goofing around on most of them. I played in a mandolin orchestra when I was 13 years old, but when I was 14, I started playing the haranger fiddle, which was the first instrument I chose to learn by myself. So I said I'd became serious when I was 14, and from there, I've been playing traditional music from my home area since.
Why traditional music? What appeals to you about Nordic traditional music? Because you could play European classical music, you could play rock music. I mean, you could be all kinds of different kinds of musician, and this is the area that you're drawn to.
Yeah, true. That's a hard question. Well, I guess some of it is my dad's fault. Well, he kind of was into it himself. And another reason can be that it's you can assign some identity to it, being your home area tradition. But in the end, it's just like any other music. It's music that I enjoy, and it comes natural to me to play and perform, so... and it's a social, you know, type of music too. You get to meet others, play with others.
And as you get deeper and deeper, you study, finally you're studying at a very high level, the history of traditional music and folk music and Nordic music. It has to be fascinating enough for you to make not only a career out of playing, but an education out of learning about it. Tell me a little bit about your education and some of the history that you have studied about the music that you play.
Well, I started off having my own fiddle teacher or a fiddle master, Lærermeister, teaching master, directly translated. Her name was Siri Duvik. So she started me off on the tradition I play the most, which is from Rogaland, my home county, Rogaland. So I went to her for my five first years, from 14 to 18, 19 years old. from there, I goofed around, or not goofed around, but I played around with a lot of other musicians making bands and stuff until I ended up doing a bachelor degree in Oslo for Norwegian folk music, Haranger fiddle as main instrument. After 2 years, I jumped into a master program, and an inter-Nordic joint master program between, let's see, this is complicated, the Sibelius Academy in Helsinki, Finland, the Royal Academy of Music in Stockholm, and then the Carl Nielsen Academy in Denmark, Odense. Mm-hmm. So I had half a year in each of those, which led me to get stranded in Finland for 7 years. What was the other part of the question?
Just wanted to know a little bit about, you know, the education. And maybe we can take a break from talking and play a little something.
Sure.
And then when we come back, you can tell us about this instrument because it's really beautiful.
Yeah.
And interesting to behold. So we'll describe it for radio listeners here in a minute. But what mm-hmm. would you like to play for us, do you think?
Yeah, okay. I'm going to do a traditional tune from Bjerkreim in Rogaland. It's called Gammal Springar, which means Old Springar. Yeah, that's his name. And it's after a fiddler called Ivar Fuglestad. So here it goes.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for that. Let's talk a little bit about this instrument that you're playing and how it's played, the style in which it's played. Mm-hmm. Start with the instrument itself. Tell us about this fiddle.
Yeah, so it's called Haringfele in Norwegian. In English, it's quite often called Haranger violin or Haranger fiddle. I like to call it just Haring fiddle in my own English. it came around like in the what's that called? My brain just got stuck. Baroque, in the Baroque
sure.
Period, where people experimented more with how they built instruments. So one of the features is that they put a lot of sympathetic strings on instruments. You have instruments like viola da mora and that family, which this fiddle is related to. You have the nyckelharpa in Sweden, which also has sympathetic strings, and a hurdy-gurdy with sympathetic strings. So it was like a... And I think a bunch of other strings also just had a lot of extra strings on them for fun, I think. So this one came around in that time.
So how many strings does this have? Because there's some on the... They're layers of strings.
Yeah. So this one has the, as the regular fiddle, it has the four top strings that you play on, the four melodic strings. And under the fingerboard, it has, today it has like four or five extra sympathetic strings. It goes through a sub-layer or sub-level on the bridge too, so under the fingerboard. And so it has, my fiddle has then five extra pegs, so nine pegs in total on my fiddle.
And it's just gorgeous. This particular instrument with its inlays and its, I don't know if those are etchings or, but the decorative aspect of it. Tell me where this instrument came from.
This one is made by a luthier called Magnus Trauma in Dala, just close to Bergen. this is a more modern take on it. The earlier fiddles were more bottle-shaped and a little bit smaller, and they might only have like two sympathetic strings, understrings.
When you hold the bow, you hold it differently than what I would see at a symphony concert. Tell us a little bit about the bowing style.
Oh, yeah. So I'm taught to hold down like the classical style down here. But I have small hands, just like our president. and I'm proud of it, by the way. Some say it's a Baroque hold, but to me it's mostly physics, because the bow actually has its balance point kind of a third, like up here, a third way in. So when I hold it closer to that balance point, it actually puts less pressure on my pinky and my other hand. So I think it just naturally glides up there, so I can relax more. Down at the end, my hand gets stiffer. I like a relaxed hand.
So all you students out there, it's okay to make some adjustments so that for your own comfort.
You don't want this to get kind of locked up when you play. So, but if you can hold it all the way down, then you have more bow, so it's preferable. But
let's talk a little bit about this music in America right now. And Bill, I want to bring you back into the conversation. There's a real interest and a longing to not only preserve in Nordic folk music, but to hear it performed live here in the region as well.
Yeah, there is, not too much in the Hardingfela. You don't see that much around in South Dakota. In Minneapolis, they have a club, I know, up there, and there's more players up there. But there's some Nordic music around in South Dakota and around the area. I play quite a bit myself, a lot of Danish music. And some Swedish and Norwegian, but it's great stuff, and it's just I also do a lot of historical research where I live in Canton, and an interesting note, I found an article in 1902 paper from Canton where they brought in having a concert of a Hardanger violinist who was fairly famous, and he had a howling dancer with him, the traditional dance they do in Norway, where the hat dance, where they kick the hat off the broomstick. So I thought that was interesting. So it's been around. And a lot of this music is dance music now. For example, like the Springar, that's a dance, right?
Absolutely, right? Yep.
Vidar. Is that a couple's dance, or is that a...
Yeah, that's actually the first couple dance ever coming to Scandinavia from Poland and Germany back in the days.
So Springar.
Yeah. I can tell you more about that if you want.
Yes, please.
Yeah, so... Scandinavian fiddle music is unique by the oldest. The oldest fiddle music you find in Scandinavia is the Springar or the Polska, which is the Polish dances. Polska is basically a reference to Poland, Polish dances. And Springar is the German term of the same dance, Springtanz, running dance, basically. It was revolutionary because it was the first couples dance coming to Scandinavia. Before that, it was all chain dances or circle dances.
Okay, sure.
So you weren't alone with your partner. So it became a hit, and it came along with a promenade leading into the running dance. So it has like a promenade part, walking for a bit, and then faster music we start, which was in three and in the 3-beat measure, which is the Springer or the Polska today. Yeah. So
I'm always fascinated by fairy tales and folk tales and stories from Scandinavia. Is there an intersection between story and music in a way that there are songs that sort of reference, you know, something that connects with a fable or a folk tale?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit.
Well, one side of it is the all the supernatural, mythical creatures that like music, like the trolls and the Huldra people, the devil, basically, some call them. So you have tunings that is more preferable for that type of music, and you have tunes connected to like the underworld people. So there's that part, and a lot of tunes is also just have stories or texts going along with them, which describes some fairy tales and stuff like that too. Yeah.
It must be fascinating to read, you know, to be studying at that level and kind of find out a connection. Yeah.
Another thing that I've read a lot about is fiddlers going into trances. That was a big thing where they would be so concentrating and playing music. I mean, I've read these books about this stuff in Norway where they would say they'd actually have to pick the fiddler up and carry him out because he would go into a trance and he'd be transported. And that was pretty common where they would talk about that kind of thing. So it was, and also that a lot of the music they got from nature, from a waterfall or from a, and one of the most famous tunes that I would know about, or maybe people here would, Fanatulin, which was about the devil.
Yeah, finally, too, and that's the devil.
Yeah, and the fiddler was Müllergutten, the miller's boy.
Yeah, he was over here.
Was he?
He was one of the first national romantic, or the first revived kind of fiddlers that got to tour all over the world. Oh, so he came to America.
Really?
So there's a lot, ton of folk tales and mythology and all that kind of stuff connected with it.
Mm. All right, what will you play for us next?
Well, I can do the second part of this, the oldest fiddle traditions. So I'll do the promenade part, a gangar type, or this in this case it's a halling. I'll do it from the same region just to stick to a theme here. So it's going to be a halling from Bjarkreim, same fiddler.
Thank you so much for that. Let's talk a little bit about preserving music and Bill, bringing music here with a living young performer who's still playing and composing, right? I mean, you create your own music as well.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
So this is very much a living tradition. I think that's really important.
That's correct. It is. Yeah. Myself and my buddies, we started playing a waltz that Vidar composed. Vidar's waltz. We're working on that. And we played at the local bar in Canton. So people get exposed to this stuff, you know. We play every Tuesday night down at a little pub in Canton, and we play the traditional music, polkas and waltzes and schottisches, and we don't care what they're, if they want to hear Led Zeppelin or whatever, you know, they're hollering out, we play what we want to play. And they actually seem to enjoy it because they put money in our tip jar. So
they're just hollering that out to mess with you.
pretty much. But,
but all right, here we go. Yeah.
But, the tradition, I think traditional music is very much alive today. A lot of young people playing it. And, so it's a great thing.
How do you add to it by, composing your own work? It's not just about, keeping a tradition. Let's talk a little bit about how that music is preserved from an archive standpoint, from a historical standpoint, but then also how you create your own music to add to this living tradition.
Okay. Oh. The conserving part... In the field, it's mostly by recording, or in early days they started to write down stuff before they were able to record. When they started to be able to record, they recorded, obviously. So actually a lot of my tunes that I have learned from my tradition is from recordings from fiddlers that are no longer around. A lot of it was recorded in the 70s and 80s. Which was like a second wave of trying to preserve music. People started to discover more traditional, not just the initial stuff that was discovered in the 1800s with Millard Guten and all of that. Yeah. So you actually, in the 70s, a lot of new eras was discovered that people realized had traditional music. So my tradition is one of those. And then another way to preserve is to, play it and teach it to others and share it. So... more people get interested in it, and you keep it alive that way. And I guess
when you compose your own music, what?
I don't think too much about it when I do. When I compose, it's a hard question. I just play something and it comes out that way. That's a very lousy answer.
If it's true, though, that's true. What happens, the real answer. That's okay.
It's like a language, So you would use those words. You won't make up new words. Yeah. So you have those phrasings and you have those rhythms. So it's like you're creating a new sentence or a new story. But you're using the same words. Yeah. It sounds like that language. It sounds like that dialect. I guess I have that accent in my music when I play tunes, so it come out that way.
How often do you get back to Norway?
Once or twice a year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And in America, you're making music and you're also teaching those traditions here. Now, who are the people who are really interested in learning right now? Is it a younger generation? Is it an older generation? Who are you seeing is excited about participating musically in this tradition?
Oh, I think it's any age. All of them are adults so far. I have seen a few kids, but most of my students are adults that come to me on their own initiative. But there's both old and people younger than me, and I forgot the question now. But
that was the question. who is engaged in this, it's vibrant.
And I play a lot of old time music, and there's a pretty good old time scene, and it's a lot of older adults in that too. 50, 60 retired people that just do it for enjoyment. But there's always younger people too that are into the music, and it's more of a participatory thing, where they're not really, they want to be playing music, and there's an old saying in the old time scene, I'd walk 10 miles to play music with people, but I wouldn't walk across the street to listen to it. So it's kind of like, that's a big part of the deal. People just like playing it and are into the tradition of it.
Let's play one more tune for us, would you please?
Story behind this is I was a student living in Oslo in a backyard garden, and in this garden there was a cabin, and the only furniture I had was this green sofa, and I played a lot of fiddle on that sofa. So here's the green sofa and gröna sofan.